Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining our call. Camillo will now walk you through the presentation, and then we will leave room to all the questions you might have on the IFRS 16 application. Please note that we are already in blackout period, so we kindly request you to avoid asking questions relating to current trading results or future targets. Camillo, please go ahead.
Thank you, Lorenza. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm referring to a presentation that's been loaded earlier today on the topic, so I'll walk you through a few slides of the presentation and obviously be available for your questions. Starting from slide number 4, I mean, the introduction of IFRS 16, as you probably know, is effective from January 1st, 2019, and it replaces any previous, you know, IFRS, IAS covering leases. And basically, everything gets classified as a leasing at this point, and what it does to the balance sheet, it creates a right-of-use asset, and then exactly equal at inception lease liability, practically for all type of leases where the commitment is set in the agreement. And as a consequence of that, we've gone through all of our existing portfolio of leases. We've taken stock of the minimum commitments of the MAG, of the minimum guaranteed payments obligations that were previously disclosed as a separate, you know, indication in the financial statements. And at this point, they become the basis for a calculation of a discounted cash flow value of this asset, which is written on the books of the group at the first of January 2019. And the variable part of the lease payments obviously will continue to be expensed above the EBITDA line, so nothing changes there, while for the fixed payments, the minimum guarantees will be capitalized. Like I said at the beginning, so on January 1st, 2019, right-of-use asset and lease liability will be the same number, both on the asset and liability side of the balance sheet. And while it will affect both the balance sheet and the P&L in terms of the geography and the total amount of P&L charges, there will be no impact on the cash flow generation, so that continues to be sort of not impacted by the application of IFRS 16. Obviously, once the asset is written on the balance sheet, if we move to slide 5, it follows a depreciation schedule, which is straight line as far as the right-of-use asset is concerned, while just to add some complexity, the liability and the implicit interest expense at this point becomes explicit on the P&L, is calculated on a decreasing balance in the P&L. So it's front-loaded, the P&L interest expense, while the capital depreciation of the asset is a straight line. So in fact, the intra-period net profit reported with IFRS 16 impact being reflected in it will have a sort of a negative impact in the beginning, and then it will reverse over the lease term, assuming a steady state portfolio. Obviously, with new leases being added on, the recalculation of the new leases will impact also the amount of interest expense that will be reflected on the P&L. On slide 6, just a few considerations of a technical and prospective nature. First of all, let's go to the assessing. I mean, it's at the bottom of the page. The estimated impact on the balance sheet for us is in the range of 2.3 billion-2.6 billion euros, which I think, if you've done some preliminary math, should not be a number that catches you as totally unprepared. It's really the combination of a certain schedule of fixed payments, obligations, discounted at an IBR and an incremental borrowing rate, which is a capital market debt type-oriented interest rate based on the interest risk-free plus credit spread, plus some adjustment for country-specific risk. So you do all that, you calculate it back, and that gives you an asset for right of use, which is in the 2.3 billion-2.6 billion euro range. This is the one we applied, given the choices that were available, we've gone for the modified retrospective approach, so we will not restate in terms of comparative information the 2019 financials. So you will start seeing this thing as a new thing with the 2019 results. And the first time that we will be, you know, kind of communicating and preparing audited financials for under this principle would be with the H1 results of 2019. So basically at the beginning of August, when we release our first half results. So again, from the first of January for the P&L, the asset is gonna be there. The exclusion applies only to the leases which mature in the first 12 months from the date of initial application, so they will continue to be expensed on the P&L as we did before. And that creates another difference between, let's say, the not only the present value, but also the perimeter in which of the portfolio in which this principle applies is limited by this exclusion. And just like I said, the discount rate are based on country and cluster of duration of contracts and updated on a half year basis. The next two slides, I would skip them. They just provide a numerical example that I think the gist of it is that this is not neutral in terms of not only the geography of the P&L, but also the net profit impact. So it's not just a question of things getting reclassified from above to below the line at the P&L level in terms of the significance of EBITDA post principal application, but because of the front-loaded nature of the interest expense and the variable nature of that expense over time, the net profit also can be negatively impacted in the first year of the application. And then it's still a question of how much new portfolio of leases with fixed payment obligation you add. So it's gonna be a dynamic number in the future. Having said that, on slide nine now, just a brief recap. I don't wanna belabor this issue, but this is really a new asset that didn't exist before, and it's calculated on a discounted cash flow basis. So then when you divide it by the remaining years of the obligation or of the asset, it gives you obviously a different number versus what used to be the nominal amount of the fixed obligation that you used to reflect and that you will continue to pay. So we will have a difference in between the amortization of the asset and the depreciation of the or the depletion of the liability. No impact on net cash flow generation. The debt metric continued to be comparable with the previous year, since we will now restate for IFRS 16. And as a matter of practicality, for sure, for as long as 2019 is concerned, we will continue to provide a set of KPIs both under the previous accounting standard and IFRS 16. So when we look at our financial results for the first six months of 2019, in August, you will be able to compare easily the first half performance of last year with this year based on the old indications, good old EBITDA and net income and all of that, and also measure the application on the first six months of the P&L impact of the IFRS 16. With that said, I would then shut up and leave it to questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone phone. The first question is from Marco Baccaglio with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I would like to know if you can be a bit more precise on the P&L impact, because this 2.3 billion-2.6 billion euro forecast was already in your company report, which was issued a couple of one month ago. And so what was the opening balance on first of January of this number, if it's possible to know? And ballpark number, can I assume that it's about 50 million euro more EBITDA and 20 million euro less net profit, the implication of this?
No, well, first of all, we didn't intend to be as granular in this call and simulate the impacts on the P&L of 2019, just like also to avoid confusion with any sort of guidance out there or consensus. We will be getting together in a few days, right, on even a capital market day and everything else, and I think that there might be a better venue. But once you take this number and you know that we have 7 years of maturities in our portfolio, I think you can play with those numbers. But in reality, since there are a series of variables that go into this equation, we want to play super safe. And so the first indication of the P&L impact will be provided with the first half of 2019.
Okay. And if I may have a follow-up.
Marco, sorry, just a little bit. You have an indication of what was in 2018 in note 2.2.11 of the consolidated financial reports. What was the fixed rent, right? The 483.8 million out of the 756 million of total rent. That was sort of the face value of those payments for 2018. So the amount of disclosure that's available today to triangulate into the new number.
Okay. Thank you.
That includes also the leases that were expiring in less than 12 months. So it's kind of difficult to really be precise in bridging from the old number to the new number. And as you can imagine, it's a big portfolio, so we will have to pass all the discussion also with the auditors.
Okay. If your portfolio evolves in the same way it is today in terms of portion of MAG and variable rents, this negative impact on the net profit will continue to be like the same if the average length of the portfolio is the same, correct?
I get the first part of the question. What is the? Can you repeat the second?
Yeah, if your portfolio of contracts, let's say, grows in line with your sales, with the same average maturity, with the same portion of variable and fixed, is it possible to assume that this lower net profit will always be there? So you will replace bad impact contracts with long length with some which are expiring, basically, no?
Yeah, I mean, conceptually you're right. Then, as usual, it's a question of the distribution of the sort of each single vintage of the portfolio. So what I'm saying is, if you have a barbell distribution, probably your interest expense maybe in period one and two goes down, stays flat, and then it goes down and it comes back again. While if you have a very constant maturity within that average duration of your new portfolio, you might assume, like you say, that this continues to be I mean, that the reverse to the lower interest expense never happens. So, long answer. I think we will discuss with you I mean, the real issue is how relevant and how reliable a net income indication going forward becomes, given the potential noise that comes from the interest component, not so much from the application of the principal per se, but the interest component, given the choppiness of a portfolio. So it can be that over time you get to that, you maintain a 7-year average maturity, but with concentration of wins and of expirations in different periods, and that might impact the recalculation of the new piece of the interest expense. It's really something we want to handle with care because it's new, and so we will need to go through some simulations before we're able to use it properly.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Alessandro Cecchini with Equita. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for taking my questions. Just to elaborate a little bit more on the free cash flow, because basically we are understanding that our previous EBITDA, of course, no sense with the new IFRS 16, and probably even net income, that's for other corporates, probably it is still very similar for you. My understanding is will be a little bit more different. I would like to point on free cash flow. For instance, in 2018, looking at your company presentation, you disclosed a free cash flow to equity of 33 million, and 2017, roughly speaking, 40 million euros. I would like to better understand if, these numbers if, of course, new IFRS 16 will be applied, remain the same, or we needed to make some adjustments or other consideration below this line. Thank you. This is my question.
Yep. Well, like I say, we're not going to be restating anything. So what I'm telling you here, it's more the application of a logical process than of an actual calculation that we will perform. But you know, at the end of the day, the payments of the rents do not change. They're the same. Whether the component is fixed or variable, we have contracts that imply a certain payment that's reflected on the P&L as far as the past is concerned, and also on the cash flow. Net of accruals and so the free cash flow is obviously fully reconciled with the P&L and it will continue to be so, and that's why we say that doesn't change, because essentially whether you calculate it on the P&L based on a discounted value and then you prorate it, or you calculate it on the cash flow based on the actual payments of invoices, then you will need to reconcile the two numbers. So long answer to a short question, the rent stays like before, and that the free cash flow is therefore the same number that you would have seen before. I think what it does for us, to take a perspective, more of a perspective than an accounting perspective, I think it's all highlighting the present value of these future obligations, which, you know, one thing was to have it reflected in a separate under, you know, the disclosure as a potential obligation. Now, having it on the balance sheet, I think it forces management to focus on the nature. I mean, you have explicit capex, I mean the one that you pay for your fixed assets, etc., and you have a potentially hidden capex that will kick in to the extent that you have not enough revenues generated by certain contracts. So in a way, it's a way of being more aware of the way we build our contractual relationships and what can be the future implications of certain levels of activity on certain type of assets, because at this point you have recognized that you have a commitment, no matter what levels of revenue predictability, etc., you will be able to generate. So that's the way we look at it, but it's not going to change very much the way we manage the business, because any decision that we take is obviously based on discounted cash flow type of calculation as far as the capex policy that we have, internal rates of returns. And those are based on real cash numbers and not on the IFRS 16.
Okay, thank you. If understood correctly, so if I put your typical free cash flow starting from EBITDA, of course you will have a much higher EBITDA, but then we need to consider, of course, if we consider the same portfolio going on, some hidden capex, basically, most in line with the depreciation, in order to have a similar free cash flow that we had in the past.
Yeah, it's a different way of saying it, but essentially it goes through a different line of your cash flow statements as a reimbursement of a lease liability, as opposed to being in operating cash out, but net.
on a net cash flow basis, on a free cash flow basis.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then, if I understood correctly, maybe some other your competitors like Lagardère, they are going to still present underlining EBITDA or matrix just to better compare numbers with the past. Are you as well thinking about this or not in the future?
For 2019, for sure. So that otherwise it's really complicated to have any relevant conversation on the 2019 performance. Then we see what the industry does. We get more confidence with these measurements, and we will decide. But the 2019 numbers will be provided on the all the new perspective.
Okay. Okay. Many thanks.
As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star then one. There is no question booked at the moment. This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to management for any closing remarks.
Thank you, everybody, for joining our call. We hope to welcome you all during our Investor Day on next 4th of June. Bye.
Stay tuned.